The Guardian.
Thank you very much. So we're here to talk about showbiz and gossip on the internet, which I guess it's changing the way some of us work. But whether you like it or not, celebrity culture is one of the defining characteristics of our age. I know celebrity mags aren't selling as well as they used to, but they still, I did some calculations, they still sell 2.6 million copies a week, and websites like Paris Hilton and Gawker are read by millions more. I was just looking at some of the coverage from the national newspapers that The Sun in the last month has mentioned Amy Winehouse 62 times. David Cameron's only been mentioned 60 times. Even The Guardian has mentioned Kate Moss 29 times in the last month, which is probably something to do with you two, I think. And The Observer is famed for its slavish devotion to showbiz news journalism, of course. And that trend is even more pronounced online. But some of the things I want to discuss tonight is whether we should really embrace that or ignore it, and how should our coverage of celebrities and showbiz differ from what's already out there, really. Does our obsession with celebrity and showbiz impinge on the rest of our journalism, like the way we cover politics and other issues? So to discuss all this, I'm joined by a star-studded panel. To my right, Marina Hyde, who is one half of The Guardian's very own 3 AM Girls, writing about Lost in Showbiz, and also writes three columns a week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Usually on various matters. And we have Camilla Wright, who is editor and co-founder of Pop Bitch, which I think we're all familiar with, now has about 350,000 subscribers. And then Hadley, the other half of Lost in Showbiz and The Guardian's deputy fashion editor, and also the author of a couple of books, including The Meaning of Sunglasses, most recently. And then our guest is flown in from the US, Mo Tassick, is that the right pronunciation? Mo Tassick, who is a features editor of US website Jezebel.com. And finally, Hugh Muir, who writes The Guardian's diary. So, before we get started, I was going to ask Camilla and Mo to just say a few words on what it is they do, for those who don't already know. Do you want to do that first, Camilla?
Sure. Hello. I run a web magazine called Pop Bitch. We started up in January 2000, basically sending out an email once a week to about four or five friends. And then for some reason, people started to ask if they could get it as well. And then we set up a subscription list, and now, as James said, we've got about 360,000 subscribers. I guess the main point behind it was to cover popular culture for adults at a time when a lot of mainstream media wasn't doing it. Now it's harder to maintain a niche, I think, because everybody's doing it. So these days you might as well see a story about an otter as you would do about Amy Winehouse, I think. Pop Bitch is mainly an email magazine, but we have a web presence, which is really just a message board. Media insiders, people who want to talk about pop culture, get on board a message board every day and swap stories, but swap insults, I think, is what most people do on the internet. And we're just about to go multi-platform, I think they say, with a move into internet radio and TV. But I think internet email gossip will be our mainstay.
Thank you. No.
All right, I work for a website called Jezebel.com. It was started by Gawker Media. And that they own Gawker and probably about 12 or 13 other blogs that all do fairly good traffic in areas ranging from gadgets to cars. And when we started it up, Nick Denton, who is a former Financial Times journalist who kind of started Gawker as a hobby, I think, he wanted to have some sort of, he had realized that, you know, he had quite a following with Gawker among kind of media insiders, but he wanted to bring it a little bit more broad-based, target women a little bit more specifically, and do a lot more celebrity stuff. And he basically told us to go after Perez Hilton. Now, he didn't tell me this until, you know, 3 or 4 months after I was hired. And so I said, no, we're not doing that. But he basically used, I think one of the things that we've successfully done is used celebrity pictures, which are sort of the basic, the most basic, easiest to get, you know, no value added, kind of, you know, addictive substance available in terms of, you know, regular news feed or kind of some created urgency. And we've used that to sort of build up a website that's about everything from politics and economics to, you know, sex to relationships, really basically a general interest publication almost, a very bare bones publication, but one with a lot of different areas of interest. So I think that, you know, as sad as I think it is that celebrity, there, you know, it has become such a crowded arena, and there's so many websites devoted to it, and it just seems like, you know, completely overwhelming sometimes. It has at least for me enabled a website that might, you know, on paper have sounded very risky. You know, oh, let's take a bunch of crazy, you know, feminist, borderline Marxists, which we are, and, you know, have them write a website that's really profane and, you know, talks about, and, you know, sends, like, one of my, like, most popular sites was, one of my most popular posts recently was a, you know, fuck you letter to Ben Bernanke, you know? I mean, it was not, like, it's not, but the basic, you know, every hour, every few minutes, there's new celebrity news that we can use and put up, and, you know, people will stay on the site because they'll know it'll constantly be updated, and it gives us time, and it gives us the kind of advertising base, and it gives us the pretty colors to go after some other topics. So.
Mo's been blogging about London. When did you arrive? Was it Sunday night you arrived?
So I arrived on Saturday.
Saturday, right. Let me just quote from Jezebel. Oh, you know, no. They say that the bad British food thing is a misnomer. It's not. I've had exactly one meal here to which McDonald's would not be preferable. So welcome to London. We'll take you out afterwards. We'll take you out afterwards to Zeta and give you a slap at meal. But I wanted to ask a general question that hopefully everyone can answer, which is, I mean, you've just said, Mo, that celebrity has become a very crowded arena, and that, but celebrity and showbiz is something that The Guardian and The Observer, Guardian Online, do to some degree. But I wonder what we should do differently and what we should do to distinguish ourselves from some of the celebrity websites that are out there. What would your view be on that for an established newspaper, a serious newspaper? Should we maintain some sort of ironic detachment from celebrity, or do you think we should just go on in there and compete with the likes of your website?
The likes of my website, God,
well, they do retain an ironic detachment.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. You know,
I mean, basically, what we did, which was, I think the smartest thing that we did, and it was totally, you know, my idea. I'll take credit for it. The night before we launched, Denton, my overlord, wanted us to go after Perez Hilton, like I said, and he was like, big pictures, and I was like, no, you know, what is this celebrity picture crap? You know, I hadn't even been introduced to our photo services, and I was like, let's just make them really small and just make it nothing but a headline. I don't want to go in. I don't want to have to critique these pictures. I'm just going to make it a headline, and we'll put them on all the time, but we're going to make them physically small on the site. So if you want to click on it and see all the snarky comments that people have, you know, that people are thinking of, That's, you know, totally within your right to do. But it's a component of the site, and depending on how, you know, depending on how busy you feel, depending on how overwhelmed at work or bored at work or whatever you are, you can, you know, choose to click on that and you know, check out Lily Allen's shoes or whatever, or not. So that was kind of basically making it a constant stream of stuff. I think I have a friend who has this theory that if all the news that you wanted and all the pop culture you wanted and porn were all mixed together on the same site, that would be the, you know, that would be the be-all, end-all business model. I don't really agree with that so much, but it is sort of the same idea.
Yeah, I don't think The Guardian is going to get into the adult content market anytime soon.
You wait.
But Maria, what's your take on this? I mean, as someone who writes about shows for The Guardian, it's not a tabloid newspaper, obviously. How do you approach the subject?
It's difficult. I mean, I would prefer us to carry on not using paparazzi pictures, and I was pissed off that when we were covering Wayne Rooney's wedding last week, we had a great big picture of them on there, on his stag party, which was based, clearly taken on a boat, and that was in the news pages. And I just thought, why are we doing this, you know, with a really detailed report about what he did on the evening? And I just thought,
I personally think,
why did we break our no paparazzi rule? You know, is it because some working class people are having a stag weekend? It looked horrible to me. So I don't think we should do that. But, you know, I totally understand what Mo is saying. I don't know whether we can get into... I personally would rather we didn't use paparazzi pictures, because I just feel that, you know, if we don't necessarily have to. But perhaps you think that eventually The Guardian is going to have to run them. I just feel like we're feeding a pretty gross industry, and, you know, we've got this rule that we don't do it. I don't mind, you know, when they are being kind of invaded. The stuff, you know, when it got to the sort of real peak with Britney Spears, and you just think, I can't actually
Britney
believe...
Britney Spears' period pictures. Yeah, I mean, that was like... Yeah, I saw that on the...
It's just unbelievable.
And I was like, am I actually experiencing this moment?
Yeah.
And it was this really weird scene where I was like, and the way that they kept the news headline was, she's not pregnant.
I just think
clever.
That was the kind of moment where I...
Yeah.
Those are, and I just think...
That moment, like, you know, 10 or 11 times in the past, you know, I feel like year, where you're like, when...
When will this... Yeah, and I just think that maybe... I don't know what you feel about whether The Guardian should just... We have a rule at the moment. We don't use paparazzi pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I see increasingly on the site and that, you know, people will end up linking to them in another paper because other papers don't have that rule.
Right.
And we're obviously coming up against a moment where we're going to have to decide what we're going to do. I personally would prefer... It is difficult. It is a kind of position to take, but I would prefer if we didn't use... That kind of...
In a way, it's easier for us than a lot of other outlets, because the readers are very quick to tell us what they do like and what they don't like, and all the while we're trying to match what we do to the standards that the readers would expect of us. And so, I mean, I think the not using paparazzi pictures is a rule is a good one, and we should stick to that. But I think you can get... We have to make a decision, in a way, about what... At what level our readers want us to pitch into celebrity
culture?
Well,
how many more? You know, do we? Who are our readers? Some people really want that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but
I will look at that stuff on other websites, and I am a writer for The Guardian. So there comes a point when we have to decide whether. I look at this stuff.
Some stories, I always think, well, I know that academics will read our paper, but does that mean that an academic won't be interested in a story about Wayne Rooney and what's happening at his wedding in Italy?
I thought we were snooty about that, so I didn't...
I think we know that there's an element of hypocrisy about it in our paper and in other papers as well. I mean, I'm sure all of us at The Guardian have experienced editors of all sections saying, we need something fun, and because people know that that's what draws the readers in the end. I mean, you have as many stories as you want about the NHS or comment pieces about... Gordon Brown or whatever, but they also want something fun because they know that that's what appeals these days.
Yeah.
We're so used to seeing it everywhere. It's on Newsnight, it's on News at 10, everywhere. This is now part of the culture.
I wanted to ask you about this because you write a diary, which, and I again looked at some of your work over the last few years. I think you've mentioned Pete Doherty three times in 2 years, which is remarkably restrained. I mean,
Amy Winehouse a few times as well.
Yeah, and Amy Winehouse a few times. But I mean, do you write about people in the public eye? but do you write about celebrities? And do you distinguish between the two? And how, and if so, how?
I think the rule that I try to follow is not who they are, but have they done something that's funny or have they said something that's funny? I don't think that I want to write about people because just intrinsically because of who they are. Mm. And I don't think that if someone is famous and he utters something, then it should be appear in the column or even in the paper just because of who they are and what they said. I think you have to make qualitative judgment. If they say something that's funny or they say something that's interesting, then I think I'll happily put it in. I don't want to be snobbish about it, but at the same time, I don't want to go along the same road as some of the tabloids. You know, Amy Winehouse went out yesterday and she was wearing a funny hat. Wow, let's get that in.
That's always the headline they put
on. So, but I mean, you do tend to write about most of your stuff is about politicians, isn't it?
Most of it is, but I also again I think that just because. It's not a. I try not to make it what you might call a downmarket column. It's not a tabloid column, but I don't think that. I hope the people who read it are interested in the whole spectrum of life, and you know, I think they are within that spectrum. And if they make a funny or a notable contribution, then put them in.
And what about? I wanted to ask you as well about the rise of political blogs. I mean, is that something that we should have done as an organisation? When you look at people like Ian Dale, and Guido Fawkes. I mean, they basically write stories that we don't touch. I mean, that's one of the things they do, isn't that right? I mean, shouldn't we have,
but we
3 years ago, decided to do something similar?
We beat ourselves up about this, you know, they write the stories that we don't touch. I mean, often we don't touch them because they're libelous or they're not true.
Yeah.
And I think
they're untrue.
If you get into that market simply by lowering the bar, then you really oughtn't to be there.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that you've had to face, isn't it, Camilla, at Potbitch?
I think independent bloggers are independent bloggers for a reason. They have a thing they want to say and they just go out and do it. And it wouldn't fit into a newspaper or a structure like The Guardian. I mean, I think The Guardian has to cover celebrity and has to cover gossip. It's a really important part of the world. It impacts so many bits of the world now. It's financially hugely important. But you have a worldview, you have a voice. And I think if you're going to do celebrity, it has to come from that voice. Mm. You can't suddenly do paparazzi one area and not in the other. I think that's crazy.
Do we have to cover gossip? Yeah, I think that we have to cover a celebrity, but the two aren't the same, are they?
Well, a lot of your stories are. I mean, particularly in a lot of stories have gossip in it. A lot of other papers would do it. It depends how you do it. You can choose exactly how you would cover gossip. A lot of political opinion writing is gossip of Westminster. It's just dressed up a bit kind of smarter.
Politics lends itself to gossip type reporting. You just have to have a little bit, you have to have more expertise and more patience to get into it. I think that if it was easier to train somebody to cover politics, a blogger, or, you know, the TMZ was trying to open a DC, you know, office for the longest time. And it's because politics is the same thing as celebrity in America, anyway, on the internet. It's a constant source of frenzied blog.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the same. I mean, if you look at it, I think the most popular politics story on the website this year, the Guardian website, is Nick Clegg bragging about how many women he shagged. That is the most popular story. Doesn't that tell you something about the sort of coverage we should? Yeah, I mean, if that engages people with politics, then why not do a 3 a.m. girls of Westminster?
I mean, you look at Wonkette, which is just the political branch of the Gawker Media. I mean, they do gossip stories, but it's not necessarily about who's having sex with who. Mm. It's who Barack Obama's choosing as his VP.
I mean,
like that.
You have to get both things, because you know, like Wonkette used to be just till recently part of us. So I know that their biggest thing, you know, that got on Drudge. Which is a huge deal, obviously, is, you know, I had sex with Larry Craig, you know, some local gay that they knew. And Larry Craig was, you know, Republicans, you know, closeted Republicans are just, you know, a huge
fair game, basically, aren't they? Yeah.
But the thing about that site was that it was, and this is a thing, too, I would be hesitant to differentiate between, you know, independent bloggers, to draw a harsh differentiation between independent bloggers and ones who can exist and have existed in traditional media. I was a journalist. Ken Lane, the guy who was running Wonkette, most of the guys, people who have done decent political blogs have been journalists. Mm-hmm. And most of the newspapers in America right now, Washington Post and the Baltimore Sun and Boston Globe, have a lot of political bloggers working for them. And, you know, it takes this whole other skill set that you need to master. You need to, like, figure out how to get your stuff on Dig and Memorandum and pimp your posts all the time and get little stupid scoops that you probably don't care about. Mm. But some people, politics guys, like people who are really into covering politics, a lot of them seem to thrive off that. It's a different kind of personality.
Mm. You mentioned the Drudge Report, just changing the subject slightly. One of the big issues for this organisation and for British newspapers generally who have marched online is the success that particularly the Mail have had by posting stories that are tailor-made for the Drudge Report. So they've basically quadrupled their traffic on the Mail by writing stories they know will appeal to Drudge. It goes on Drudge, and they get a lot of traffic through the back door. I mean, is that not something we should consider as an organisation? If it's going to drive our own traffic, I don't know what you think, Marina. If it means more eyeballs for the Guardian,
I mean, obviously the things I've had that have got on there, it's extraordinary how many more emails you'll get and how many comments. It doesn't actually make that much difference, but in terms of how many emails you get. I can't remember, I wrote something about Prince Harry when he went to Afghanistan, and I just had like 2,000 emails in one. Yeah.
Point is that from a business perspective, if you get, obviously, the more eyeballs you get, the more traffic you get. The Guardian's now in a position where other websites are catching up or overtaking it in terms of readers globally. Is that not something we should embrace if it means we're going to get more readers? Hugh, what's your
read? A story search to make sure that it goes through that process.
Sorry.
How do you write your story, and how do you convey it in such a way?
There's obviously a dark formula they take you aside.
Maybe there is, but I mean, the point is, the more celebrity stories you do, the more likely they're going to end up on Drudge. I guess the Mail is very good at that. Its online offering doesn't really reflect its what's in its newspaper anymore in terms of the decline of Britain, and the Mail's online stuff is very showbiz orientated. So is there not a case for doing one thing in the Guardian newspaper and having a slightly different identity online? Is that not something that
doesn't that make us a bit disingenuous?
And also
do it everywhere,
surely the Guardian online, the whole point of it is to spread the brand name, to use that rather unfortunate term, globally, where that doesn't seem to be the Mail's intention. So to have a different image for Guardian Unlimited completely sort of ruins that point, if we're supposed to be spreading this idea that we are the leading liberal newspaper. Yeah. If we had loads of pictures of Britney Spears not being pregnant on Guardian Unlimited, that doesn't really work.
I mean, that's the thing, we do showbiz coverage, so should we just abandon it altogether?
I don't think we should. No, absolutely not. You can't ignore the subject. I mean, it's like, when Alan first asked me to do the Lost in Showbiz column, he said, I just feel really bad that we're actually ignoring this totally. And, it's kind of like ignoring rock and roll music or whatever. The Times famously said in the 60s, we're not going to write about rock and roll, and now they just are like dicks, So the point was that you have to engage with the subject. But, I personally find the fact that Angelina Jolie is officially advising on the Iraqi refugee crisis absolutely ridiculous. Mm. And you can engage with the subject and write this, right? Rather than just saying, hooray, Angelina's in Iraq in another flak jacket, rather than just thinking, my God, how is this happening? This is so ridiculous. Mm. Pick a lane, love.
Yeah. What about this?
She's a fan of the troop surge. She actually wrote a comment on the Washington Post.
Yeah, I saw that.
She
wrote.
What we can't know what goes on in the picture.
It was better, she had gotten better since she wrote something for The Economist Year in Review, and that didn't really make any sense. No. But then when she came out in support of the troop surge, I was like, oh, okay, we're finally getting some coherent policy.
Yeah, I did need her to set a policy stall. The star of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. That was important.
Foreign policy. It's great.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. The Middle East, they're all over it.
I think what Marina says, it is a part of culture, but you just write about it intelligently. I mean, you see that on Jezebel, you see that on various select places. It is there, in the same way you can write about music in an intelligent way and not have to be like Gordon Smart in the bazaar and get excited if Chris Martin sees you in the VIP room.
But writing about intelligently, doesn't that just mean sneering at it?
No, it doesn't. That just means
a very lefty sort of take on.
Well, in the same way you write about music intelligently or films intelligently, you know, you don't have to gush over the latest bit, you know, you don't have to gush over Mr. and Mrs. Smith just because it's got Angelina and Brad in it and you think that they're getting it on seriously. You actually write about it, you review it intelligently.
You write about the movie, and if, you know, if she wants to start talking about Iraq, then you may find yourself having to say, look, I love you as an actress, but this is ridiculous.
I don't think that there will be any set of rules either. I think Marina will write about something in her column with her picture on it in a way that's different to the way I would write about it. In my column, I think that happened last week with the Rooney wedding. I think I sneered.
Well, you're
in traditional fashion.
And you defended
it a lot kinder.
I thought the sneering was disgusting.
On the basis that it's just an excuse to sneer at chavs.
Working class people.
Or white trash.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Or there's like bigger things to sneer at.
Than a very modest, successful couple spending a lot of money on their wedding, being very generous to their friends. Camilla, can you tell us a bit about your plans to expand into radio and TV, was it?
Well, radio really came about because, I mean, Pop Bitch When really was a celebration of pop and pop music and pop for adults. And as time's gone on, the kind of the tsunami of celebrity news has kind of stopped us focusing on, actually it was about good tunes that you liked and maybe you used to be afraid to say you liked. So the radio was really a move into away from celebrity into music.
Right.
Carve out a slightly different space. I don't think you can really do celebrity news very well on radio.
Is this partly because you think the market's so crowded that you need to move away from celebrities to survive
partly
as a business?
It seemed like fun. No. It was more just to seem like fun. You don't want to, as people have said here, just because you can use a photograph and then comment on it. You don't have to. And therefore, doing things which are not what everybody else is doing, but you actually think are quite fun to do, I think are still an important part of business. And you should probably think of that while increasing your online content, because if all you want to do is to increase eyeballs and increase traffic and increase advertising, that doesn't sound like something that The Guardian is passionate about or committed to or, you know, is going to strengthen your brand. It's just about a business thing. If it's a business thing, then I suppose you might have to, but I think your coverage should be from people who have something they want to say rather than feel they should say it. And therefore, if you're going to cover showbiz online, you've got to want to do it.
It's like Gore Vidal shit has its own integrity, doesn't it? This is a famous quote. But I mean, as someone who's been a pioneer of this, riding this tsunami, I mean, do you think it will ever crash and fade away? Do you think is the public's appetite for this sort of stuff insatiable?
I think there's a huge appetite, but I think what people will want to see at different times will probably come in and out of fashion. I think there's already becoming a bit of a bore with just page after page of look at the sweaty armpits, and before that there was, you know, years and years of Hello magazine, look at the beautiful princess. I think they'll kind of things move on and change, and there's so many people doing the same thing, such as paparazzi shots, snarky comments, that, I mean, can you really bother to look at that very often now? Whereas somebody doing something slightly different or bringing other elements into it, I think will be popular. I don't think celebrity as a defining part of our culture is going to go away for a while. The nature of celebrity has changed in the last few years. We now, our celebrities are people who are famous for being famous. A few years ago, they were famous for doing other things. That might change again.
I mean,
then it might get more interesting.
The whole reality show conveyor belt and people becoming famous just for being on the telly who weren't famous for. I mean, is that something that's done in part by tabloids because it's a cheap way of filling pages, do you think?
Yes.
I mean, is that the real motivation? It's not just because their readers want to read about it. It's because it's cheap and easy.
It doesn't draw people in long term. That if you look at all the sales figures and all the tabloids and all the, if you look at real breakdowns, they get a real that people will flood in while Big Brother's running, and people will look at it all the time, and then they just disappear. You don't have them stay. They don't stay with your product. They don't say, oh, now I really like going to, you know, I really enjoy buying, you know, the Sun, the Mirror, whatever that we. I'm now going to keep buying it. Doesn't affect sales, long term sales at all of the print edition, and it doesn't. Nor does it affect the. They just have these blips. They have these spikes around this month, and then it just fades.
It's just
away.
Like giving away a DVD.
Yeah, it's like exactly. Yeah.
But I kind of see it as like the sort of craze for cheap clothes on the high street. I mean, the Big Brother contestants on them, they are basically like Primark clothes, and people get really excited about them, and then they throw them away. They're like these £3 vests that are all just flooding away, and you hear all these stories about Primark is now over and whatever, and we're going to get more expensive clothes. I kind of see that happening with celebrities. I think people are kind of tired of these people who just appear then disappear.
So we're going to have a move to quality.
Quality celebrities.
Well, I didn't feel that at all.
What you're talking about is sort of the same thing that that is happening. That happens with Drudge, you know. I mean, that's when you get a link to Drudge, you get all this extra traffic. But how much is it really worth if you don't really have an audience to sell to advertisers? And definitely, you know, it requires a weird balance, because there is this kind of personality type that you need to have that wants to know everything that's going on, that wants to... I was reading this Dostoevsky book, The Idiot, the other day, and I came across this kind of passage about this guy who, you know, is basically soulless, but all he cares about, he knows everybody's rank and everybody's, you know, it's called Omniscient Man. And, you know, you need those people to make sure that shit gets updated. Because honestly, I feel like journalists, most editors, creative types, you know, we're interested in what we're interested in, you know? Like, I don't want to post 8 times a day. I mean, it's really, I have to get it up, you know? I have to really, like, be like, okay, focus,
you do, you do
find
post,
something.
You do post 3 or 4 times a day, don't you?
I post 8 times a day.
You do post 8 times a day, yeah.
Yeah, in general. Sometimes more, sometimes a little less, depending, but that's generally like the baseline. And you know, it's really hard to figure out, you know, what do I really have to add to this at any given point?
Well, what amazes me, I mean, if you're posting 8 times a day and you work mostly from home, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
You all do there. How do you find the time to go out, get ideas, meet people, get stories? I mean, that's what journalists
do. That's why it's so constipating, you know? Mm. That's why I'm saying, if this is the future of journalism...
Go back to your worktops and prepare for redundancy. Yeah.
Seriously.
Okay, so should we throw it open? I think we've got a microphone, haven't we, that you need to speak into.
I just wanted to follow up, actually, on pretty much that subject, because Camilla said really early on, she said, it's really important to cover celebrity, and I'm thinking, why? I mean, celebrities don't pass any laws, no laws are passed about them, except, you know, very possibly something to do with privacy and stuff. They don't change the world. If you're living in a council estate, you know, what Amy Winehouse does or does not do makes no impact on your life at all. Not the slightest. So, you know, why is it important? Because they don't actually affect anything. And the second part of what I wanted to ask was that Popbitch really started, and the thing that was so magical about it at the start was that it was all the back channel stuff. It was, I went to interview X and they're a complete arse, and you know, this and that and blah 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 blah, and you got the much bigger picture, which seems somehow to have disappeared and doesn't now come through. So, you know, why is celebrity important? Yeah. Why? And secondly, is it impossible? Yeah, well, is it impossible to get it back?
Well, I think that you say celebrity is not important. They're huge role models to a lot of people, so how they behave has an importance through society. As a global economic force, they're massive. The amount of money that a celebrity brand will make for it in the British economy is huge. If you think of somebody like Kylie Minogue or Wayne Rooney, they probably have about 5,000 people whose jobs or their livelihoods directly flow from them, from restaurateurs to hotels they go to their own management companies. So therefore, it's a huge economic force, which you're just ignoring if you don't cover it. And maybe you want to cover it in a different way. Maybe you want to cover the deals behind the scenes and the how business is being done, why these things are happening, why somebody in the newspaper, whose publicist has put them there, things like that.
It's a big, it's a huge part of culture. You just can't, I think to ignore it would be kind of, I don't know really how you can. It's like ignoring sport because you think, you know, there were like Marxists used to say that there must be no sports pages in a Marxist, in any Marxist publication because this is just stuff they invent so that you're not interested, you know, so that you just are ignoring the man stamping down on your face. And I mean, that is, that just insults the, that insults, you know, your readers to a degree because they are interested in it. There's just a way of doing it.
Just saying, I mean, the other point you made was Potbitch as an industry, an industry inside it, that seems to have lost some of its irreverence, if you like.
There's, I would think there's still some of it there, but as the audience has got bigger, I guess stories come in different ways. If anybody wants to send me a story from the insider's perspective, I'd happily run it.
Have we got? Does anyone else want to ask a question?
I'm just wondering, how you think The Guardian should cover celebrity and show business, because a logical consequence of what you're saying, we've got to realize it is important, it is there. So should we have a show business correspondent like The Telegraph does, or should we do it the way we do it, which is in kind of an irreverent way?
Well, in your sports pages, I really like David Conn's column, which is the business behind sport. I think it fulfills a role nobody else is doing.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
In sports journalism, it's telling you the money and the corruption in a way nobody else does. So the corruption and the money and the weird things going on all around the world in celebrity.
Yeah,
you would think
we've actually suggested this before. I really think that's a total, all of that side of the business is completely fascinating, and just ownership, these huge media ownership companies and how they feed through. I think that could be really well covered. Yes, I think we should have news stories covering it, you know, but I think you always have to add value to some, you know, if you don't just, I mean, just sort of photo calls and all that sort of boring stuff, you know, kind of boring diary stuff to some, not that diary, but the diary column, yeah, but what news desk called the diary stuff, just events that. We should spend money on, you know, you have to add value, I think, because otherwise you're just recycling the wires and things like that, which is kind of, you know, if you see every time that, even if it's a tiny line, every time they write something on Jezebel, every time they'll link to a story and news, they will always add value by, you'll know a bit their take on it. Well, it's more of a pleasure to read. There's something given to you rather than stuff, you know, you can otherwise just look on the BBC website and just have someone basically regurgitate the wires for you of what's going on in celebrity in that day. I think we should always try and add value.
Well, this is kind of the thing with when people talk about celebrity journalism, is it's either, because a lot of journalists, like Maureen said, are quite lazy and we just sit in our offices and don't really feel like going out, it's either PR puff pieces that get fed to you, or it's just looking at pictures and sneering at them. So it's between two camps. But if you actually can treat it as a business, like Camilla suggests, then it becomes much more interesting and makes a lot more sense.
If you study that business, that's when you become a Marxist, though, because, like, honestly, I mean, at least with sport, there's interesting shit going on. You know, there's facilities and there are, you know, massive salaries that, you know, I mean, the putting together a sports team and the mathematics of that, and, you know, I don't know anything about sports, so I'm talking out of my ass, but, like, there's nothing like that with the, you know, paparazzi photo industry. These people are the basest form of just demand creation. They have... There's no utility there. There's no utility to Kim Kardashian, I swear to God. I mean, she has an ass. But,
she does.
I mean, that's one of the, like, you know, because in the States, there's a lot of fairly highbrow publications that cover celebrity culture pretty well, I think. I think The Washington Post does a really good job. I'm pro The Washington Post. And I think that The New Yorker does a pretty good job. But the when The New Yorker wrote about the Hills, which is not our most vapid reality TV show, but like maybe the most famous for being vapid, and the writer wrote, you know, I think the people, she's like, why do people watch the Hills? Because nothing happens. It's just a bunch of kids in LA who work for, they don't really have jobs. They don't have interesting conversations because they've really never progressed. They've been watched since high school. And, you know, American high schoolers are really, like, you know, almost
there's like a tyranny of vapidness in American high school that I hear from the Wall Street Journal you guys are picking up on here with the prom. I didn't know that British teenagers went to prom. That's great, guys.
We don't know. I saw this thing today. That picture was really disturbing.
Oh, my God. You should go on the website. There are many more disturbing pictures where that came from. And there's a video. But she wrote of the hills. I think that people, because, you know, a lot of people in the media, people that, you know, were very well educated and, you know, shouldn't be doing this with their time, watch the hills. And she said, I think that people watch the hills to figure out why they watch the hills. That kind of sums it up to me. What I think that more people should focus on the business, but it's not, you know, there are these like really fringy players, like the people who own X17 and are kind of, you know, like hire, you know, that Brazilians and Romanians and, you know, smuggle them in or whatever. I mean, it's not, if you're in Hollywood and you know, but the business and you know, kind of, you know, you're into movies or that sort of thing. This kind of like lowbrow celebrity culture is not as sexy a business to cover, but it's important. It's important to do that.
If we're going to go after the purveyors of all this media nonsense or showbiz rubbish, then we need to be writing more about Rupert Murdoch, don't we? And the people that own the big media conglomerates that pump it out.
Or also just how the celebrities are created. I mean, just take an example. Yesterday, a bunch of people in London, like people who own clubs and magazines and fashion editors, all got sent the very exciting email that Kim Kardashian, stylist and American celebrity, is coming to town and she would like some work for a small fee. So if anybody would like to talk to her, please call this number. And so those kinds of things are quite fun, and I think things like that Guardian readers are quite interested in, even though English people, most British people don't know who the Kardashians are.
No, not yet.
But they, I mean, I'm sure if Kim Kardashian wants to make a splash here, she will make, I mean, she's already on the E! Channel. Things like that I find quite funny. Or things like watching, like, the channel that sums up this whole thing, the E! Channel, and you watch the Living Lohan, or whatever it's called, show about Lindsay's mother, and every morning, and she has an employee whose entire job is just to sit on the internet all day and find stories about Lindsay. And that in itself is just fascinating to watch. The three of them.
My job.
I mean, I can watch E! All day. I could watch it. I spend most Sundays watching E! Entertainment. I think it's fantastic.
You can't,
I mean, it's just light relief, isn't it? Why could, you know, what's wrong with it?
And you can have really, really important it's people writing about celebrity.
No.
You think of writers like Tom Wolfe and Hunter Thompson. They seem to be comfortable talking about, commenting on the world of celebrity as they were in the world of politics or anything else.
Yeah.
And rather than having kind of stuff that's important and stuff that we, you know, laugh at or sent the worst people to write on, or we kind of give our own take on it, it should all be part of the same world. It should be the same voice. It should be the same confidence and...
It's tricky, though, because it's a bit like asking people how they vote. They'll always tell you what they think you want to hear, but they won't necessarily tell you. If you ask people, what are you really interested in? Are you interested in this dreadful situation between Paul McCartney and his wife and how much money he's got to give her? And they'll say, oh, no, it's their business. And then they'll read every bit. And we know that from the traffic on the website. So even for us, trying to match what we think our readership want to what we provide for them is really difficult.
It's a guilty pleasure, isn't it?
Yeah. And also because of the print edition, which, you know, the most people, actually, amongst the people who buy the print edition, they are not so traditionally so into all of this. And I mean, is there going to be some point where we just say, right, we're just cutting these guys off and we're just going to run with loads of stuff about Lindsay Lohan because we get loads of numbers from it? And, you know, these people with, these stereotypical Guardian readers, they're just going to have to get used to it. I would be sad because, as Hadley says, the brand, to some degree, you know, is associated with not being like that. And Camilla was also saying it sounds to a degree like we don't know what we want to do. And I think that's probably quite true. Well, we are having this conference.
Well, the Mail be very ruthless about saying that person, that's one of our celebrities, that person... No, that's not one of ours.
You're not going to embrace Kardashian. You don't know who she is yet, but when you do, you're going to say she's definitely not one of ours.
You should come on.
You're just going to say, no, we've got to draw our line here.
She's basically, so what is she? I mean, she should explain it.
Kim Kardashian.
She's
the daughter of one of O.J. Simpson's lawyers who has since died, and she and her sisters, who all begin with the letter K, and I can't remember what they're all called now.
Chloe.
Courtney.
So, and their mother and their stepfather, Bruce Jenner, have a reality show.
Bruce Jenner, yeah, of course.
Bruce Jenner's son.
She was like a random Paris Hilton associate. I mean, this is how tenuous the web has now spread out.
Celebrity stylist and Paris Hilton friend, yeah. Kim Kardashian, is coming.
She's now
town.
Sort of an aspiring, what we would call an aspiring glamour girl. I mean, is she not even.
I mean, she would describe herself in that sort of catch-all way. I mean, all these girls describe themselves the same way: either lingerie designer or fashion stylist, which basically means I buy clothes.
Yeah.
And all she does is go, and she was in a sex tape. Sorry, that was her breaking moment. She was in a sex tape on the internet.
But I would read. I'd read the Kardashians account. Coming if it also told me how that came about.
Yes, exactly. As Hadley was saying, that would be funny to read.
I mean, Bruce Jenner's the interesting one there, isn't he? I mean,
it's the new coming out party. It's like debutantes in the old days when people were sort of launched, but it's just slightly different.
Mm. Now it's a sex tape.
Used to be a white dress and the Queen, now it's a night vision. Nice.
Well, one of the interesting things about the Kardashians actually is that I was reading in this Wall Street Journal piece about the Hills, and the thing is that Brody Jenner, who's Bruce Jenner's son, who's the step, like the, you know, the half brother of the Kardashians, one of the reasons he was such a good boyfriend for LC, who's like the heroine of the Hills, really mirthless heroine, but anyway. And one of the reasons that he was so good was that he had already kind of, you know, he was allowed to be on all these reality shows, or he had already kind of, like, you know, he already had cameramen following him, so, like, he never had a problem, like, appearing on camera, and he didn't have any sort of, I mean, I forget what it was, but it was, like, the people who they actually hang out with are governed by these contracts that, you know, with, like, non-compete clauses. So basically, like, it's just, it's nuts, you know?
Yeah, non-compete clauses with who you go to, basically, to a bar with. Mm. I mean, that's kind of interesting. So you can write about it, really. It is fascinating.
Vanity Fair tried to do it last year when they profiled the various boyfriends of all these celebrities.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun story.
Which was, I thought it was kind of interesting, but kind of, they kind of missed it, because Vanity Fair is so enthralled to Hollywood PRs. You read, I mean, they're so proud of the way they do these war exposés, and then you turn the page and you read this whole story about how Angelina Jolie is literally Aphrodite of our time. Thank God we are born in an age where Angelina Jolie is around. And so they couldn't actually say anything about these people, because out of fear that they might piss off Britney Spears' PR, and please, please God, one day let's get an interview with Britney Spears. But if you are in a newspaper or on a website or in a magazine that doesn't care about that, then you can actually do it in a very funny way, because I really did want to know, you know, sort of the phenomenon behind K-Fed or something, all that kind of thing. In going to these clubs where these ex-boyfriends of these girls who you've only vaguely heard of are the kings of the club, that kind of thing is quite funny when you see it from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, because I mean, it's an analogy with fashion. I mean, if you're working on a fashion magazine,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's difficult to write about the people that advertise your magazine, but if you write, that's a great strength, obviously, of working on a paper like The Guardian. You can write whatever you like about Armani.
Exactly.
Presumably, you won't get banned from the show, or maybe you would.
Yeah, that's a whole other story. But
you are banned.
They'll ban.
Yeah, another banning came yesterday. But
it's
anyway, it is true. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I like doing the celebrity stuff with Marina on the web, in the same way that I like doing the fashion stuff in The Guardian, because, you know, until the day Stanis Sterlitz has a fashion show, then I don't need to worry about upsetting advertisers for The Guardian. So,
I mean, I think eventually too, if you don't salivate all over these people and you do form some sort of, you know, reputation for, you know, some people are sticklers and publicists are assholes in general, but, like, you know, they like negative attention. They're starting to get into it, I think, you know? I mean, a lot of people have. I mean, the sex tape, what is that, you know?
Showreel of sorts.
I mean, do you think that anyone has actually deliberately issued a sex tape?
Yes.
Kim Kardashian.
Kim, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And probably Callum Best.
Callum Best.
So we need to get an exclusive interview with Kim, don't we?
I wonder if the panel could draw a line for us. So online, we've got these dual pressures. One is that we've just lost our number one position as the top British newspaper website to the Telegraph, and the Mail is right behind us. So there's this pressure to have as many hits as possible. And we could do that every day by having picture galleries of Britney and Paris Hilton and just click on them all you like, and we could do that. But so what should we do and what shouldn't we do? I mean, there's an interesting bearing in mind that it's also the way we do it. I mean, when we did the when we got Lisa Appignanese, who's an expert on psychiatric health of women in history, we got her to do analysis of Britney Spears, which was a brilliantly Guardian way of doing it, if I say so ourselves. But it was that was still number one on the site that day. So, you know, you can sort of go around it. But, you know, so where would you draw the line? What do you think we can do and what do you think we can't do? Where is the line?
I personally think we should update more often. I write three columns a week for the paper, and then I do also the blog, but it's just not, you know, it's not possible to constantly, you know, to make it. I think we should update as, you know, not, I mean, I know Denton thing started out with sort of 14 updates a day, and now they've got bigger and bigger and bigger. But I mean, I think, you know, mine and Hadley's blog and the other people who contributed, I think it should update, you know, it must update 15 times a day. It doesn't. I think that's a problem because people, as Mo says, you know, people don't keep coming back because they want to know that you're going to come back to the site because it's refreshing and it's always updating. We're not doing that at the moment, and it's kind of fitting in around, we need to just work out our schedule better so that you can find time to fit in all these things.
But presumably that means you need more staff, basically.
Yeah.
Which is why we're all merging and, you know, the Observer's being taken over by the Guardian. As far as I understand it, I'm not sure that's the
official version.
Blanketed, yes. Embraced. Yeah. Have we got any more questions? No, the rest of the panel, yeah sorry. Go on. The line between what we can and can't do.
What we shouldn't do is lose sight of who we are, because I think there are easy ways to chase more hits and more sales. But ultimately, you destroy yourself if you destroy your brand. And so I think that it's about calibrating our approach to it and saying, well, you know, celebrities are of interest to our readers, even if they don't want to admit it. But how exactly do we present it to them without becoming a pale shadow of papers that will inevitably do it better than us because they'll spend more money on it? Mm. I mean, I think the example you gave was a very good one, in that you get in there, but you do it in a way that we can justify as The Guardian.
Hadley, what's your take on this?
Well, I think, like you say, it's the way we do it, really. That's the difference. And obviously, having sort of these really distressing pictures of Britney Spears, just random pictures, is not useful. But doing something like a whole big story in the way that we did with her mental health is more interesting. The problem is if you could then kind of paint yourself into a sort of sued corner of hypocrisy, where you're sort of wanting to talk about it but forcing yourself to do it in this chin-stroking way. I think if you don't actually have something to say, you're just going, look at this, then it's not useful. But if you do have something to say about the way, for example, Amy Winehouse is being covered, or, you know, Britney being hounded, or if she's actually selling herself to do this, then that is more interesting than just saying, here's a picture of Amy Winehouse falling down the stairs with her turban on.
The problem is, I mean, that traditionally that's been the way of broadsheets to cover showbiz, hasn't it? By saying, oh, look at this, look at the way the Sun have covered this.
That's just us talking about other papers. That's a different thing. But actually, the phenomenon of like, you know, what Maria is saying about the whole sex tape as your kind of debutante announcement, that's quite an interesting, fun story, because that is true now. That is the way a lot of people make themselves famous. But if we just did, here's this girl called Kim Kardashian, her dad once defended OJ, here's a sex tape, that's not so interesting, really.
But yeah, I don't think we should stream sex tapes. I think that's a line. That's my line.
But kind of noting a phenomenon, or noting the way that we react to it, or like what Camilla said, you know, how coverage of celebrity, how it kind of goes like that, how it changes, that is interesting.
I think that, like, there is a need that's filled, even though I detest the industry, or kind of, you know, just the how boring it can get sometimes. There is a need that's... I have a co-blogger who's very, very transfixed by reality TV, and she always finds funny clips, and she's always, you know, she's just very... She finds it hilarious, and it fills a need for her, and it fills a need, I think, in the culture for... I mean, I think of things in the States. My best example lately has been the Elliot Spitzer scandal, which was kind of captivating on this like almost literary level, in in New York, and I think, you know, across the country. I think that you have to, one thing that I've realized is that, you know, there's this younger generation who reads only this stuff, and they are going to, and they, even if they're, you know, smart, they're always, there's always like a desire to kind of figure out why we watch The Hills or why we pay attention to this stuff. So think pieces, if you can generate them, you know, are always, I think they're always going to be big traffic generators, depending on how you, you know, kind of arrange them. And one thing I've noticed about news sites in the States is how prominent the most emailed list has become. And the most emailed list, you know, on the New York Times website or the, you know, in the, you know, Wall Street Journal website, the Wall Street Journal website has like, you know, 10 of these lists like next to one another, which is kind of a little overwhelming. But it'll be like Obama's a Marxist, or, you know, like, you know, some version of that, some opinion piece about the economy, something on, you know, Malthusian survivalism, something on, you know, what evolutionary biology says about your, you know, addiction to coffee. And then it'll be like, you know, a Britney Spears or, you know, some celebrity piece. And then it'll be, you know, the latest, you know, relationship advice column. And you see what people are clicking on. And it's a mixture of highbrow and lowbrow, you know. But people, there's some comfort in having it all together. I know that there are people who are clicking on, you know, a story on oil prices because they go to that column to see what other people are doing. Just like on my site, I know that people have become, my readers have become a lot more interested in politics and in the campaigns and in kind of, you know, just things that I want them to be interested in, because we also give them what they're there for. And I think that in the, with a newer generation of readers, and it's kind of, you need to make it, keep it all in brand, but I wouldn't be too hesitant to mix it all up in places, in more places on the blog, so that you can have a, you know, like, there's food riots, and, you know, Amy Winehouse, you know, together, because this new generation, I don't know if they're as brain dead in here as they are back in the States, but they need it to be mixed up.
So basically you're sweetening the pill.
Sort of, yeah.
Or not even. I mean, people are allowed to be interested in both. It's not like someone who only looks at celebrity only looks at celebrity. I mean, I have been known once in a while to look at the news pages in this paper. So I think, you know, people are, it's not as divided as we like to think of with readers.
And the easiest way, I think, online to increase traffic is more small things by more people more often. More updates, yeah, definitely. But just more little bits and pieces that you can get into, even if it is just a few lines by someone that you're interested in. And it'll make it harder for people to get to these stories. The reason someone like The Sun increases its traffic so much is that it's three clicks to get through to the story, so they've immediately got three times as many page impressions as somebody who says, hi, I want my reader to get to a page. I mean, in the long run, people might not go back to The Sun because it's so hard to get to a story, but if you want people, you need maybe to get people to work a bit more if you just want to increase your traffic, but then maybe that won't be such a good reader experience.
Have we got any more questions?
I wanted to ask Camilla. I still think Popbitch is fantastic, and as the email I really look forward to getting all the time. But one thing I was thinking about, just online in general, I think we found with GU as well, there are certain things we've done at Guardian Unlimited or guardian.co.uk, which were quite small sites or were specific to a small community, and there were people who really got them, perhaps. So maybe you got your stories or your the kind of things you were writing in a certain way. And when it got bigger, you suddenly have, I guess, lawyers, and maybe in your case too, I guess, PRs. I just wonder if people are trying to plant stories with you, and if you are aware of lawyers and also of your audience. Now that it's so big, is it, do you sometimes think people just don't get it in the same way? And I wonder if there's something there that everyone might like to think about just with online for The Guardian as well. Do you think what you did was maybe a unique moment in online history that can't really be repeated because it was about a small community and now it's a mass market?
I think when you've got a small committed community, it's much easier to keep your focus on who you're writing about and what you're writing. And it's good to get feedback, which is you're not doing what you did once, because you might not even realise that actually that bit's missing. It might not be possible to put back in. It might have been a certain time. But I think things work really well on the net when they're for... You know who you're writing for, and people are in a community, and they kind of care about what they read and what other people are writing. And there's probably elements in the Guardian's website that could do that. You could sort of grow your own communities in different areas much more. Because what I found was that the best contributors and the best writers really were people who were just passionate about something. And then I guess publisher is still small enough to, I'm hoping, still have a kind of community feel to it. But as things get bigger, they always change.
But you get away with publishing things on Popish that you wouldn't get away with in newspapers?
My non-affair with Alan Rossbridge.
Oh, that's... Yep. I wasn't going to mention that.
Perhaps you'd like to say sorry to the group. you never apologise.
I thought I did. I'm
no,
sorry.
You didn't. You promised not to.
Well, you can apologise. Consider it an apology has been issued.
I will then.
I will. Do you want me to write one tomorrow?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
No, you don't have... Just to me, that was...
Just a personal
just
as
well. Just, how many people read that? 350,000.
But no one believed it.
Really? I think a lot of people believed it.
And that was and who was putting that around then?
I shudder to think.
Are we ready? On that note, I think we should change the subject swiftly. Please.
I just wanted to get that out.
No, good.
On a recorded thing.
Good for you. Put it on record.
Put that on record.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Do you feel you've had to tone down some of the content, though, in a sense, make it more mainstream?
Not really. It's not really very mainstream. There's probably a general toning down, because in the Wild West of like 2000, you could get away with
libeling people left, right, and centre.
Well, nobody really knew what the rules were then. Mm. Now the rules are a bit more set, so you've got to play by them a bit more. But it doesn't mean you can't try and have a bit of fun. And I think you can do that a lot in I think the web's an amazing thing for creating communities. It's really, really for people who care passionately about something. And if you can grow them and they kind of grow outwards, then you've got not just, passing traffic, but you've got people who will respond to you for a long time.
And what about this issue of PRs planting stories or using you as an outlet? I mean, is that something that they've tried to do,
so
or
much.
They do it surreptitiously?
Yeah, I mean, I've had PR companies offering to pay us a lot of money each year in order to get their clients in it. But it's so transparent.
Mm.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably been one along the way missed, but it's too transparent to see it. You know, online PR, viral PR is obvious. It's, hey, I came across this band and they're really good. Look at their website. MySpace page, and I've nothing to do with them, honest sort of thing. But as that gets more, as that gets cleverer, it's going to be more insidious, and it's going to be harder for people to work out what's marketing and what's blogging and what's a real story. And I think that kind of blurring is going to be quite a weird thing in the web.
Mm. Have we got any further questions?
I'm quite interested in the issue of truth and how that kind of affects things. Now that what used to be quite an underground area of celebrity gossip, the kind of, the who's gay, who's on drugs, who's having an affair, which has gone completely mainstream, and how that affects you all as journalists, that this is now as being reported in a newspaper or on a website.
Yeah, I mean, it's you don't have that kind of... You can't... By reporting these stories, you're not adding any value anymore because everyone's doing it. I mean, it's not, pop star doesn't take drugs. That's a story now because everybody's reporting it. So I think just going for stories that people didn't used to print is an impossible task because there's people on the web now who print things that I couldn't print because we're printed in Britain. And there's people on the net who print things that don't know if anybody would ever have got away with, but they're kind of out there,
And the smallness and message boards and forums and things like that.
I mean, that's the thing, the message boards are the place.
You can't completely police it, I don't think.
No.
But in terms of actually, writing stories that you think are going to be, too racy for anywhere else I don't know if that's so true anymore. Content is sort of everywhere and it's become more acceptable. I mean, this,
you didn't used to talk about kind of, you didn't used to get away with being on drugs and a pop star in the way that you do now. So I think, I don't know, maybe start inning people.
Inning them, yes. Amy doesn't do drugs.
Fake gays in the media.
I tried to in H from Step once.
Did you?
Didn't work.
No.
Actually straight. I mean, how's it all, I was interested, Mo, to find out how the media in the US, the mainstream media, the established media, has responded to the advent of sites like Jezebel and Perez Hilton. I mean, if you take the New York Post, for instance, page 6, isn't it, which is very well known, very famous. I mean, have they responded by going online and marching onto your territory, or are they just doing the same thing they've always done?
Page 6 actually tried to start a site for, I think, the third time. Under the page6.com URL, and it failed. My roommate actually went to work there for a minute. It failed. I don't know why. I mean, they
just... It's a huge brand. It's a very strong brand.
It is a huge brand, and they have... I mean, the thing about doing that sort of reporting, which is kind of New York gossip that involves calling people up and running around and going to events, which is... crap that I don't, you know, I don't want to do.
Well, that's sort of what journalism is meant to be about, isn't it? That's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It is what it's meant to be about. I've always been more of a kind of non... I've never been a gossip reporter, so it's not my thing. And so I definitely...
Huh? More confident.
Right. So have they... Generally, the mainstream press has been really nice to us because I think that we represent some sort of, you know, cut above, like the Perez's and the TMZ's. Mm. They always like, you know, they're really...
Many cuts above, surely.
Yeah, they're just really nice to us. Like, we get quoted and stuff. It's been great. But how have they responded? I think that the big thing that newspapers have to get, I was just thinking when you were talking about communities and how you reach out to the masses while keeping your kind of brand. Basically, I think that there's like an 80-20 rule with these things. I haven't looked at the metrics. I'm just guessing. Where 80% of the traffic is generated by 20% or smaller of the users. And those are the people who are commenters. And we have a very, you know, if you want to comment on our site or any of the Gawker media sites, you have to kind of audition. And, you know, we have people who are paid to make sure that trolls are kept out and that, you know, things don't get too personal. And they have commenter pages, and like there's just all this incredible functionality. But people look at it as a community of commenters, and they are the ones who are clicking all day, and they are the ones who, on a newspaper website, what I've noticed with the like Times and the Post, the Washington Post, both have pretty dynamic websites. They have like a few bloggers who have who know how to blog and do and drive traffic to other places in the site to the people who want to be reading the blogs, and they have online chats with, you know, all the time, live blogs. These are the kinds of things that can get you a lot of hits, anything that's sort of like dynamic, and that's reaching out to, you know, a small community of readers that is very passionate and is kind of like the heart of your brand. And that can happen concurrently with, you know, all of the other stuff. A lot of people don't... I mean, I don't know why I would... Like, I'm really glad that I never had a job that was so boring that I would, like, want to post comments on a blog all day, you know? Like, but they do. And I've met them because they have meetups and like they're real people. One of them was working for Bear Stearns. I understood. She was like, all of the other websites were blocked apparently. She's like, but otherwise, you know, it's a mentality that I don't quite understand, but they're very passionate.
There's a huge audience. What about, I mean, your comments about, not getting out there and not being one of those journalists who goes out and gets stories. I mean, aren't we risking a situation where we just
have about 10 people who go and get the stories, and then 1,000 people who comment on the stories they get, who then, and then other people who comment on their take on. I mean, it's just, I mean, isn't that a threat to journalism? Yeah. That doesn't sound too dramatic.
I mean, there's stuff that you can do. I think that personally, I just don't have any interest in doing that kind of reporting. I try to add value in whatever way I can, you know, like because it's really kind of like something that is important to me. But there are things like, you know, Angelina Jolie wrote a book about, I forget, you know, refugees or something. Like, she really wrote a book about this. It's like 300 pages. I've never read, there's nowhere on the internet that you can sort of get the highlights or like anything about this book. You know, it was referenced vaguely in the Tom Janod Esquire piece. So I think that he actually bothered to read it. But there's stuff like that that you can always get, you know, transcripts, court documents. That's the kind of stuff that I think is interesting. I personally just kind of, like, I hate events. But, you know, there's always
thanks
something.
Thanks for coming.
You know, somebody wrote, posted Mystery. It was this, like, renowned pickup artist reality show. They posted his phone number online, and I, like, had a conversation with him that was very odd. Mm. And then, like, or there was this Casanova, Paul Janka.
You went to his house.
And I went to his house. You know, I'll do that. If it's going to be an interesting yarn, you know. So, like, I think that, but not enough people do this. And, you know, you just have to get the right people who are, you know, desperate enough that they will. Like, the other day, and the thing about having constant deadlines is that it will make you efficient. Like, the other day, the New York Times wrote a story about this, apparently, this German bestseller. It's apparently really explicit, and it's all about this woman and her vagina. And my brother happens to work at the German embassy, and he had a copy of this book because his fiance was reading it aloud to him just to gross him out. And one of my co-bloggers on the site was a German literature major. So I had her go grab it at his house, and by the end of the day, she translated some passages to the delight of, you know, our readers.
That's the vagina monologues.
Yeah, exactly. And by the end of the day, you know, the guy who wrote the story for the Times is like, do you want to translate this book? They're looking for a translator. But, like, it's the kind of thing, like, where if you just say, okay, can we do this now? And if you've worked at a newspaper, you know what it's like. You know, if you've covered, like, the City Desk, it's the same kind of thing. Just applying that, like, okay, let's do it now and get it up. Like, can, I think, you know, anybody who does any of that at all will have themselves an audience, because so many people are so freaking lazy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly a difference between, like, going, like, between staying in and finding things on German newspaper websites about books and going to some terrible premiere launch party and being fed a story by a PR about how kind Tom Hanks is to children or something. I mean,
you go to a show and then you meet, you know, your celebrity friends who I've seen your picture on numerous occasions.
Friends, yes,
Erin O'Connor and all the rest of them, and you've talk to them and they have too much to drink and they tell you that, you know, something they shouldn't tell you. That's the point of going to these events, isn't it?
Well,
presumably. Well, that's
what, for me or for,
well, generally for most journalists, that's the,
I think so, but I think most journalists, no, I mean, I think, like, Mark as the arts correspondent here goes to more of these events than you. When you go to these kind of staged events, that the stories that you're fed are just PR placements.
Yeah. The events are not private parties. It's not like some sort of Truman Capote thing. They're there to promote a new Mercedes or something, you know. And there are lots of London celebrities who are there because they're launching a new Mercedes car, and you just think, I mean, you know, anyone tells you at that, they want you to know, and they want someone to write it in a newspaper, and it's all grist to their mill. You know, I mean, the amount of times I've seen a story like Jodie Kidd is organising a new, you know, her own polo range or whatever, and you think, my God, you know, what was the point of going to that event? It's just promotional. Everyone's, you know, if it was like you were at some amazing soiree and someone said something arch over the canapes and then, you know, but then people don't report it because people hardly report it because they want to go back to those amazing soirees.
What's interesting about
Hugh,
that?
I was going to say, let me ask you that because, I mean, that's presumably what you do every evening, isn't it? Going listen to people saying arch things over the canapes.
That's what I tell the powers that be.
Yeah. Or are you just sitting at home having a can of Stella and watching the football?
No, but I'm believing in going to events mainly because so often they go wrong. And I think just because you go to an event and it's all been set up for you and they want to put a certain message across doesn't mean that you have to put that message across.
Yeah, quite, yeah.
Because I'm sad like that. I went to a Home Office poster launch this morning for their binge drinking ad. And they've stuck mannequins in the shop front in Covent Garden to try and persuade 18 to 24-year-olds not to drink. And the window is so dark, you can't see what's inside.
Mm.
And so the first question to the minister when he turned up was, this is all very well, but what's in there? You tell me, because I can't see it. And so the whole thing went wrong. Well, this is a £6 million postal launch. And so I think that things are worth going to, just because so often you have to laugh. But if you don't go, you don't know.
No, that's true. I mean, what I meant was so many of these events, like what you see on page 6 or in this Evening Standard, the diary thing there, is just people going to these, you know, I don't know, the latest Boris Johnson launch or Boris Johnson's sister's book launch or whatever, and then they're fed some story and then they just reprint it straight.
That's if you play the game.
Exactly.
I mean, they are full of more off-diary stuff, if you want to put it like that, aren't they? The Londoner's Diary, I think, is the best thing about the Evening Standard. I mean, it's quite, and maybe that just says more about me than...
And the Evening Standard.
Or the Evening Standard.
At page 6, one thing that I think about people who work at page 6 or do that job, I mean, New York has a lot of these people, and I guess London, I'm sure London does too, but like people who actually are ambitious enough that they don't mind talking to publicists for a living. And like, I mean, like personally, I hate talking to publicists, and I, you know, I try to be nice, but, you know, avoid it at all costs. And what I've noticed is that like a lot of kind of gossipy, you can make personalities, and that's one of the things that Gawker did. I think they were just going to parties that, you know, where people would be that were less detestable than the Page 6 crowd, and little by little they would make, you know, a freaking, you know, sub agent at ICM into their celebrity, or like they would make,
you can create personalities,
really,
which is quite
really
funny.
Like, you know, dumb figures, you know, people who have people who are making like $16,000 a year, or like, you know, an attractive New York Observer contributor. I mean, basically, they created this whole other class of celebrities, I think, just because they couldn't be bothered to go to the real big events, like Fashion Week events.
Yeah, I felt that when I was doing the diary that, you know, it sometimes...
And so just create your
some
own.
Of the more neurotic press officers, just because they were so insanely sort of...
Or if you went cross or that kind of
thing. Yeah, and they gave you... I mean, in New York, I don't know, like, they just would give me so much hell for showing up and, you know, then you'd be at this thing and you'd try to talk to people who obviously think they're really important, and you're just like... You know, I'm a journalist. I don't have the problem with talking to people and having an awkward conversation, but it's like, to what end, you know? So I think that that's what, you know, like, you know, with events, you can just go to events that are... I think that, like, it would be great to cover an event, like, every day, but I wouldn't generally want it to be, like, a celebrity-studded event because, you know, events are kind of interesting on their own. Mm. Everyone has their personalities.
Have we got time for another question, if there's anyone who wants to ask one? Or not? No? Should we wrap it up? Yeah. Okay, thank you everyone for coming. And I think it's about time to go and watch the Italy-France game, isn't it? What's left of it. But thank you. Can we have a round of applause for Camilla?
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.